comedy podcast, comedy podcast. Get your ass ready for a comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
Comedy podcast, comedy podcast. A certified motherfucking comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
Get yourself together. It's a certified fucking good time.
Yeah! Woe is me. Woe is you. Woe is everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
Woe.
Woe. Woe there.
I was running through the six with my woes. You know how that should go. I guess I'm not supposed to reference Drake. I don't know.
You're Skyping in from your wife's computer. So your PFP, you're like, your beautiful wife is staring me in the face because it's her headshot, right?
She looks
nice in the photo. And she's like, she's looking directly into the lens. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to change the account before I logged on.
Goodness, no. Hey, how you doing, man? It's been 2 weeks.
It's been two, you know, pretty long weeks for me. I have some great transportation related content today, but yeah, it's been a you know, crazy couple of weeks. I'm pushing to the end of my current employment situation, so I'm trying to contribute and, you know, train folks and, you know, get folks ready for my absence. So I've been just working a ton. It's been pretty exhausting. You hit a new gig.
You found a new gig and you're transitioning.
Yes, I am indeed transitioning into a new gig from door-to-door sales to software implementation for mostly public sector clients.
Wow. Well, that's good, man.
Good. I'm super grateful. It's definitely more in line with the kind of work that I want to be doing. I excel in a sales role, but I have a track record of burning out, and it's just not something that I really love to do. And I know none of us are, not many of us are so lucky to get to do something we love to do, but the idea of helping, you know, public sector clients that are delivering essential services to like transfer over their historic data and improve their processes with new software. It's super exciting. I think I'm going to be able to find some purpose in it.
A lot of red flags there.
Yeah. It's going to be boring and complicated.
No. The major red flag being like helping do data migrations.
it's gonna be grueling.
Let us get our clutches on your precious data and ingest it into our system from which you will never be able to leave. That's what I hear. It's like a bunch of companies signed up for, a bunch of governments signed up for software in the 2000s that they like essentially it like is the worst software in the world, and they will basically never be able to stop paying those contracts because it requires like the exfiltration of that data and it being ingested into a new system and then maintaining like operational consistency through that process. It's not impossible, it's just expensive, right?
And I'm now that expense.
Yeah.
Goodness. I'm a big part of that expense. So, I mean, it's similar, honestly, to some of the work that I was doing at my last gig. I'm excited. I think it'll be okay. I'm compensated based on the number of hours I bill. So it's going to be okay. And I'm excited to learn some new things. I've been brushing up on SQL and, just kind of getting my wheels turning before I dive in. There's 8 weeks of training, so I think it's going to be pretty intense, but I'm eager to learn, you know, some stuff instead of kind of doing this thing that I know how to do that is, you know, more interpersonal and just about keeping the vibes good and talking to as many people as possible. I'm excited for another sort of challenge working with
now,
more
are they gonna pay you on a contract basis?
No, I'm a full-time, non-exempt salaried employee. Sick, yeah.
That's good. Please reach out to me with your SQL questions.
Yes, I will.
Don't hesitate to ask.
Yeah, as I run into all of
that goes for the folks at home, too. don't hesitate if you need any questions about data processing. Please reach out. No, man. I mean, I'm happy to hear that you've got some good shit going on in your life because, bro, the last, 2 weeks, I've just been waking up every day and totally just going through the motions.
Well, after the crawdad shortage.
Working enough to not be happy. Like, there's a threshold where if you work under it, it's like, oh, you know, most of my time is spent chilling, vibing, you know, sucking and fucking, whatever sure. It is you do, right? And you sort of have like a healthy psyche. But if you work, if your life consists of standing in a room full of chandeliers and watching people guzzle gumbo, more than the tolerable threshold, you start to get sad. And man, I've just been like fucking scrolling TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, I've just been like,
yeah,
I've just been in like a
numbing.
Yeah. Total numbing state outside of work. And it's been terrible. I've South by was last week, so I've been wearing our new merch around South by Southwest.
Oh, hell
yeah.
You know,
just trying to look good in the city. You know, be out. And I gotta say, Hit Me With Your Car is a banger. People were looking at me like, man, you're fucking crazy. Because there's so much going on for South By, and there's so much traffic and so many people. It's like, to wear a Hit Me With Your Car shirt is really kind of a gamble. So if you want to join the club, if you want to experience something exhilarating, go to roadway.report and click through to the merch store and get yourself a Hit Me With Your Car shirt.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like we should put in like really small print maybe on the back. This shirt does not constitute consent for traffic violence. So, you know, in the case that someone...
But it does. I mean, let's be real, though. If you put it on and you get hit by a car on purpose, it could very well potentially cost you a legal defense. So...
Sure. But
I've been thinking about that.
Sure, but nobody gets hit by a car on purpose. Well, not nobody.
That's true. Well, no, not...
Our listeners, I don't think, would.
It's more accurate to say that, like, yeah, it's a pretty negligible amount of people.
I mean, our listeners probably wouldn't.
We don't even know, though. That's the thing. We assign intention, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, our listeners probably wouldn't, intentionally get hit by a car because they don't exist.
We have a few listeners, and they're beautiful. They're hot and sexy and intelligent.
Absolutely. Obviously, I'm just poking fun at ourselves here.
Tell me about your content, baby.
Okay, so I sent you some images yesterday. I don't know if you got a chance to look at them.
Yeah, let me pull them up.
But I found a really wonderful old document that's called Mile High Trolleys. And it is a history with a ton of images, a couple of maps, a corporate structure document that's really, really cool and informative. And it's about mostly the Denver Tramway and all of the streetcars that operated through Denver through the late 1800s through about 1950. Just some incredible images here, a great map of the region and the interurban lines that existed in the teens and right around 1920. And then, yeah, a corporate structure breaking down all of the different consolidations of the Denver Tramway, some reporting on some of the history and things that happened, including the tramway strike of 1919, as well as the tramway strike of 1920. Tramway strike of 1920 ended up in a riot throughout the city where they upturned a couple of streetcars. Two people ended up getting killed, but yeah, the people went out. They were striking. The tramway wouldn't increase the fares from 5 cents, and so the operators who were a part of the union decided to strike, and then they rallied the people, and the people went out, and they flipped over some cars, and they pushed for better wages, and eventually they were able to win those concessions from the tramway. So just cool to, you know, read some transit history in my city, which is often feels like a place that was conceived of for the car entirely. But a good reminder that it's not, and that solidarity and labor actions work. And just really, really fascinating images, and reminder that back in the day, if you wanted to get around Denver, you took the streetcar. And people complained about them. They were very loud. They would get crowded as Denver got more populated. There's certain things that have always been griped about. And some of it is concurrent with the gripes that I hear about the bus system now. But just a great document. It's important that we look backwards at our history and understand that some of these technologies, while antiquated in some senses, were more social, more environmentally friendly ways of getting around the city. So I've been really excited because I've been looking for this book for a while, and I found it at a bookstore in Colorado Springs. I was down there this week for my wife's been on a contract down there, so I was visiting. And I've just been hyped on it.
Streetcar. Yeah, baby. Turns out high-frequency, low-speed transit is pretty desirable. People want that car. I think my favorite fun fact about the Austin streetcar is that the Red Line performed so poorly in its opening that I'm pretty sure that the mule cars from, like, the 1870s, 1880s, yeah, would have served more passenger trips than the Red Line, because the Red Line had such catastrophic engineering limitations that it just serves so few people per day.
Even
100 people a day. And yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I mean, at least when the mule car was all that was around, I mean, the mule car certainly would have served more than 100 people per day.
Yeah, even though the population was probably 1,000 fold.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, it was 10% or 20% of the 2,000 people who live there. It was still more people than the 1% of 1% of people who take the Red Line.
Yep. Yeah. One of the crazy things for me on the Denver Tramway Interurban Lines map from January 1st, 1920 is you could easily get on the Interurban Lines from Denver to Golden. And I know you once made your way to Golden on a bicycle, and I think you were hoping to take transit back. And the light rail line that they built to Golden is actually like 2 miles away from Golden. So, you know, 105 years ago, you could have hopped on a streetcar Interurban Line and gotten back to the city. But now you can't. Even though we have all this fancy technology, we've put tens and tens of millions of dollars into the light rail. But they haven't built it really to serve everyday people or really to be a functional transit network. It's more lip service for all the libbies.
I hate liberals. They've ruined our society. Okay, I'm sending you two maps. Austin, circa...
Yeah, I have both. This book has not given me the very, very best maps. It does have like a map of the downtown loop of the streetcar and just how it worked, which I've never seen before, from 1911. But I think it's the 1917 Denver streetcar network map. That was when the streetcar was at its broadest service.
Bro. So in 1925, there was a stop on the streetcar at my fucking house. So I'm like livid right now. So pull up the
Austin map.
pull up either one.
I'm gonna do
one.
This for my computer. Who knows what will happen?
Yeah. Yeah. So Congress has always Congress and Sixth Street have always been the what you would call the most important transportation corridors in the city. This was true pre-car, true, you know, rail era, you might call it, car era. These are still really high traffic corridors.
It's a geographical fact of the city.
Right, right. The very first transit was started in the 1870s. It was not electrified. It was horse-powered, if you will.
Yep.
And that ran up and down Congress. I'm pretty sure it also ran east-west on 6th. In the 1890s, land developers who were like rail men, essentially, like people from other cities who were, you know, making a living speculating on land and developing land in the American West. They would build transit to sell houses. So they would build suburbs, yeah. And then they would build like streetcar rail.
Classic
to those places.
Story, yeah.
So we started getting electric streetcar in the 1890s. I think something like 1891 is when the electric streetcar opened up to Hyde Park. So, like, you know, we're down at 6th Street. That's the downtown area. Hyde Park is all the way up 38th to 45th Street. So, like, you know, and that's where I've actually spent most of my time living in Austin.
Yeah, right.
There's a spur on the 6th Street line that comes up Rio Grande and goes to my house. It's literally it stops at 28th and Rio Grande and Guad, right? And I live
and then hangs
that's
a
my
right.
Block.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so I could have walked outside. And 100 years ago, I could have walked outside my house, gotten on a streetcar, gone directly to the dead center of town, 6th and Congress. It remains the center of town. It's been the center of town ever since it was settled by Anglos, right?
Ever since it was an Anglo town.
And now today, there is no streetcar on Rio Grande. There's half a fucking bike lane.
Is there a bus line that runs down?
No. So I would have to walk maybe 10 minutes to get to the bus stop.
Wow.
And then the bus stop would take me 10 minutes from 6th and Congress, right? Because we stopped running buses on Congress. We don't run streetcar on Congress. We have the world's worst fucking bike lane on Congress. There is 4 lanes for moving traffic, 2 lanes for parking, 1 lane for turning traffic, right? So we have 7 lanes of car space, a fucking 5-foot sidewalk, a bike lane that is only conflict points with parking spaces.
Yay!
And I would have to do 20 minutes of walking for what really should be like a 20-minute streetcar trip, right?
Yep.
Like, I'm only trying to go 2 miles. I can ride my bicycle there in maybe 10 minutes, 8 to 12 minutes. It's just an abject failure in planning. Like, what the fuck are we doing? What the flying fuck are we doing? It's just so fucking inefficient to put every monkey in a tank and make them park at whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Store your 2-ton piece of personal property everywhere you go. It's a fun challenge.
It's like, it's in addition to the whole roadway report bullshit, like it kills people. Oh yeah. My God. God damn it. Look at this other spur on the Congress line. It comes up to 34th and Duval.
Yeah.
I lived at 35th and Duval for 5 years. So both of my apartments of the last like decade have been directly at the terminus of a former streetcar line. And both of them are like, I mean, they're still served by transit compared to everywhere else in the city.
Right. Your urban core.
But not in like a functional way. Like any sane person living at either of those two locations is still going to want to have a car, right?
Yep.
Pretty much every normie. Pretty much every single normie would tell you, yeah, you need a car to live in Austin. And these are places that were historically served by transit.
Yeah. And this is the story for pretty much all of our cities. We had some tools in the beginning of the 20th century that really worked to get people around the city. And they were the ways that the cities were growing. And it was the way that real estate speculators chose where to develop more housing is they did it along the streetcar lines. If you peep the link that I sent you back, this Austin map in 1925 is awesome. I haven't seen this before. But yeah, peep this link that I sent you and look at the extent of the streetcar in Denver in 1917.
Well, Denver's a little older than Austin. I mean, like, it just had, oh my fucking God, what a spider. What a sexy little spider you've got here.
It was an incredible system. People really loved it. I mean, everyone always complained about the noise, especially once they were electrified, because our system started, you know, as horse-drawn and mule-drawn, of course, to begin with, and it was really just along the diagonal grid that you see that kind of runs parallel to the river. At the top of that grid is where most of the railroad freight would come in and out of the city. It's also that north side of the city is historically where ore processing and oil processing have been done and continue to be done to this day. But yeah, the two places that I've lived, you know, here in Denver in the last 5-6 years. One of them is at just south of City Park there. So it would be on the connection between the line that runs down Colfax and the line that ran down 17th Avenue. And then the other one, the place that I live right now, is at the terminus of that line that terminates at Colorado Boulevard and 6th Avenue. So, you know, every place that I've lived, I would have had several options in terms of how to ride the streetcar and get downtown. And I mean, we live in these places, you know, like you said, because they are better served by transit. I am along some of the bus, the primary bus corridors for the buses that run consistently in our city. And the reason that those buses run consistently is because the city developed around the streetcar, and those corridors continue to be the important corridors to get around. And yeah, right, they're like 3-lane one-way roads, and people go like 60 miles an hour in the urban core of the city. I think the speed limit is 30, 35, but you know, people fly down those three.
Yeah, people will fly. Specifically, one-way multi-lane roads are some of the most dangerous. It's basically the most dangerous way to design a road in an urban environment.
Yeah, I've written the city and the RTD and everybody several times. I do it every few months. I get frustrated by it when I try to cross one of those roads. And I write them and I tell them, this is a travesty. This is a public health disaster. Please, please, please make these two-way roads at the very least. You know, it would just require paint. Like, it wouldn't require any infrastructure changes. We could change all those one ways into two-way roads, and it would make the city incredibly safer. But of course, our country's MO is always to prioritize driver convenience over human life and dignity. So I never get a response or any sort of movement on that, obviously. But I'm one guy. We gotta go block the road.
Yeah, we really gotta start organizing around these issues as public health issues, as equity issues, because God, it's like, look at these changes we've done. We'll post the link to the map of Denver's former streetcar network and the map of Austin's former streetcar network. I know the LA one is fucking insane too.
Yeah, that's maybe the most eye-opening.
But these hit home to us. I think what is staggering to me is that, like, these are changes that we would never accept, like, if they were done all at once. If you were to say, like, hey, we want to get rid of the city's whole transit system and fill every street with cars until nobody can breathe, and then we have, like, you know, an outsized number of low-income people getting hit by cars, I don't know. I don't know. They won, man. God, they won so hard, and they crushed everything good. Like, this, how their sell when, like, oh, we're going to run buses instead was like, it's like a streetcar that you can run anywhere.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And it's just like, oh, Jesus.
And first
we do so much in response to the conflict between cars and urban life. Like, people constantly complain, like, oh, I'm stuck in traffic. Traffic is so loud. Cities are so loud. Cities are so gross. We do so much policymaking in response to the conflict of cars and urban life, but none of the responses we come up with address the fact that cars are incompatible with urban life. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's like, it's like, oh, the streetcars and cars keep hitting each other. Oh my fucking God. Maybe we should get rid of the streetcars.
Maybe we should get rid of the thing that's predictable.
People keep getting killed on electric scooters, and it's like because they keep getting hit by cars. Oh my God, my children, like kids don't play outside anymore. Fucking cars everywhere. You can't let your kid outside because public space isn't safe for children, wildlife, women. Like, cars, baby.
Yep. And it's especially,
you know, like stranger danger. Like, what do you do if like a white van pulls up to you and the door opens? It's like, hey, help me find my dog. That's cars.
Yeah,
you
you
can't take a kid without a car.
It's true. I think I've well, that's not true, but it is way easier. And I think I've said this before, but our society and our culture continues to demonize human beings and make human beings the thing to be feared, especially in the context of urbanism and talking about cities. It's about the dangerous people that live in cities. And what really should be feared is getting hit by a car, because it's so much more likely than being attacked by a person. And, you know, obviously,
depends on where you live.
That's true. But yeah. It's true. But I mean, in the vast majority of spaces in Denver, that's the case in the city that I live in. So I'm speaking of my own experience, and obviously I speak from privilege.
This is reductive, but a lot of the time it's like gun violence is on a census tract by census tract basis largely. So it's like depending on which side of the tracks you live on.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, getting hit by a car is indiscriminate and just sort of this wash of violence that sits over our cities.
Well, I mean, it is discriminate. That's another thing. It's like, it's not random. It affects low-income people more. Mm-hmm. It affects, like, I don't know, something like 70% of pedestrian, like, non-motorist deaths are men. So I don't want to say it's indiscriminate, right? Like, you can die randomly. And yes, it's like men, women, and children are all affected by this.
Well, and people in cars, we do have to consider that people that die in cars, like on the freeway, in collisions, you know, their lives matter as well.
No, it's true. I mean, there was a 6-month-old child that was crushed by an 18-wheeler on I-35 last week.
Oh, man.
It was a 17-car, 5-fatality collision. And it was just like traffic was backed up and an 18-wheeler smashed into it at like 60.
Yikes.
So
big yikes.
I don't know. That's engineered into the system. Like, that's something you can't fix without getting rid of the freeway. Like, dead ass. That is always going to happen when you have 10-ton trucks traveling 70 miles an hour. Eventually someone's gonna fuck up. Eventually someone's gonna have a seizure. Eventually someone's gonna be drunk, right? Like,
yeah. And I mean, freight becomes another, you know, question, but it's the combination. We use the same system of individual pilots for multi-ton vehicles to
every day, yeah,
both ship all of the goods that come in and out of cities that are necessary for city life to persist. This is part of what makes cities cities, is that they are the hubs for things and people, right? And so we do need to find clever ways to get freight in and out of cities. It's just part of it. But to use the exact same system piloted by individual flawed human beings for that trucker who is taking, a ton of coal or whatever it is into the heart of the city or out of the heart of the city, as the mother who is driving her baby to a doctor's appointment or whatever the case may be. Like, it's such an absurdity to me that we accept that
human failure and human flaws, we allow them to just operate in this system against each other.
Because people are going to make mistakes no matter what. And instead of those mistakes being, oops, sorry, didn't mean to bump into you there, it's, my baby is gone.
Right, exactly. You know, those... It's just such an unsafe system. And it's like we can see all the benefits of urban life and fast and convenient transportation. I just wish it weren't so inequitable, right? Like, okay, fine. You want to go live in Round Rock? You want to go live in a soulless, fucking washed-up suburb and drive everywhere and be a little cuck? Sure, go. I don't fucking care. But it's the fact that that necessitates car dominance of all public space everywhere you go, no matter what. It's like, it's so fucking dumb. It's so fucking sad. We've removed children from public life. We've removed people with disabilities from public life. We've removed humanity from public life. It's so fucking dumb. You know, like, and there are so many solutions to this problem. Bicycles, scooters, the bus. I think personal conveyances are going to play a really, really, really major role in a post-car world because mm-hmm. we do thrive. Like, there's an independence to it, right? Like, I always have my bicycle. I can always go wherever I want, whenever I want, in a way that is sometimes limited by public transportation. Even in functional systems of public transportation.
Yeah.
There's a certain desirability to the independence of, like, personal conveyances, like whether it be a car or a scooter. But I don't know. We're so spread out. We're going to need a lot of bus miles. We're going to need a lot of bus miles, and probably a lot of bike lanes, too.
I think we...
Penny for penny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we could look to some of these old streetcar maps as a means to, and obviously dense housing and urban amenities have moved places from some of these old maps. People's needs have changed, you know, with technological advances and such. But if we could look at these streetcar maps as a means to kind of start, right? I feel like that's a great place to start because we are going to have to run a lot of bus miles. But if we can focus those bus miles into where these streetcar networks run, if we could run buses, you know, as frequently.
Wherever the streetcar network used to exist pre-war is probably dense enough to support other modes. But it's the development that happened after the war, which can essentially only be serviced by bus miles or like on-demand transit service.
Right. Right.
We shouldn't be running rail to, what's a good example? We shouldn't be running rail to I'm trying to think of a good example.
To the Lakeline Mall.
Well, right. Like to the Lakeline Mall, to the fucking Six Flags San Antonio, like stuff that's exurban, essentially. Stuff that has nothing to do with the urban fabric, I don't know, like the fucking Circuit of the Americas. Like they just bought a field in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Unless
there's nothing there.
Unless it's part of some other interurban line. I went down to Colorado Springs. I took the Bustang, and
that's so fucking hot. What you just said.
the Bussy Tang and. it was, you know, it's excruciating. It takes like 2.5 hours. It's like,
that's why they have to call it that. So they trick you into riding it.
Exactly. I mean, it's comfortable enough and it's not so bad, but I know how quickly a train could get there. Even just a heavy rail train going, you know, 40 miles an hour, it would probably get there in about the same amount of time. It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. The bus operates just in like mixed traffic, which can get absolutely crazy. So you're liable to be on the bus for, you know, 3.5 hours between Denver and Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. And then I had someone pick me up from the station in Colorado Springs, which was very kind. But Next time I go, I think I'm going to go back in a couple weeks. I'm going to try to navigate the bus system, because Colorado Springs, I don't know if you've looked at that on the map, is just one giant suburb in terms of development. It's all post-war development, and it's these winding 6 to 10 lane essentially freeways that cut through the entire city. And I've never tried to navigate the bus system there, but I know that it exists, so I'm gonna try to do it, and I'll let you all know.
I see a pretty significant grid here.
Okay, yeah, downtown, but that's not where people live. You could live downtown, but it's the same thing that you're describing where
okay, I see what you mean.
It's the same thing that you're describing, that this post-war development, this, you know, an old Colorado City is sort of different.
This ratio holds true for like a lot of places in America. Something like 20-30% pre-war, 60-70% post-war.
Yeah.
Like a lot of sprawl, but some serviceable bones in the center.
Yeah.
But then I'm sure when you zoom in, it's like, oh, well, then when you build these arterials that act as barriers. I've stopped viewing roads as connectors, and they're just barriers.
They're barriers. Now. Yeah.
Because I'm not in a car. I cannot access your public space. Yep. This is a wall. This is a fucking wall.
Yeah.
If I were to time my fucking urban bike rides, fucking 30% of all the time I spend in transit from source to destination is spent waiting for cars.
Waiting to cross at
signalized intersections. It's spent waiting for crosswalks, waiting for greens. It's like people bitch about cyclists in the motherfucking road. But I swear to God, you do not spend 20 to 30% of your time in transit waiting for cyclists. In general, right? But you fat fucks waste 20 to 30% of every fucking time I go to the fucking store, I go to work, I go to see a friend, I go to the doctor, every fucking time I leave the house, in addition to almost being hit by a car, you fat fucks have the fucking audacity to make me wait at fucking stoplights in the 105 fucking degree heat. It's like, bro, you're in a fucking tank. You got AC, you got climate control, and I am in the goddamn Texas sun, just sit my fat ass sitting in the direct radiation, just waiting for an intersection. Just having you fat fucks blow by, blowing exhaust in my face.
Yeah, not to mention the air you have to breathe.
Right, right. It's like, oh, you're giving me respiratory disease. I'm just sitting here and just absorbing the skin cancer. Because you fucking inbred chuds are the only people who get to access public space, right? Because we hate poor people. It's the dumbest system. Anyone who supports it is a fucking cuck. Don't respect people who carry water for this system. When people are like, oh, but like, what will I do when it rains? Just be like, fuck you, bro. Cars are killing so many people. Climate change is real. You've cucked yourself.
Carry an umbrella.
Yeah, for real. Carry an umbrella. Just be like, are you too much of a pussy to leave the fucking house?
Yep.
How's that for toxic masculinity?
That's pretty good.
Obviously, I'm a little heated about this.
No, I'm just processing what you said, and it is difficult, because that is what I want to say to people as well. But it's not a very persuasive argument, you know what I mean? And there are a ton of dangers out there, particularly for women, particularly for children, particularly for people that have trouble getting around. It's even more dangerous for them because the other dangers in the world, you know, present themselves, because it's so isolating to be out in public space when you're not in a motor vehicle in so many places. And so, yeah, I think that anyone who is capable of going out there and using the city, taking up urban space, those of us that are, you know, physically able, particularly men, need to get out there and do it. It's really, it's more our responsibility to move the culture in that direction, because we can't ask our marginalized neighbors to do that, because they actually are in more danger than we are. And so we have to, you know, lead the way in terms of driving that change, I think. I just wanted to voice that, but I share your outrage.
No, I mean, it's just fucking dumb. The system that exists is not functional. It serves everybody poorly. But it exists to crush the poor. It's almost like that's its primary function, to remove poor people from public space.
Well, going back to some of our other conversations, it literally like was about that, like the gutting of our historic walkable urban centers in favor of freeways and car delivery systems to workplaces from sprawling post-war suburbs. The subsidization of that was in order to exclude people of color and poor people from that technological advancement. You know, redlining was about that. And, you know, racial covenants in the new suburban communities actively held people away from it. And now we're in a world that completely is reflected in that vision that they had in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is really wild to like be like, oh god, we have all these problems with urban space, and then just to harken back, it's like, oh fuck, wait, it was literally just to be racist. The whole thing was just to be racist. It was just like, oh god, I hate living near black people. Get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Or in some cases,
a new paradigm of urban development.
Yeah. So I think that's a good moment to turn to another topic I wanted to discuss. Ben, I have to be honest with you. I have to share. I received a diagnosis. I've got a touch of the madness.
Madness?
Madness.
Madness?
March madness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of college basketball. My buddy gave me his YouTube TV login, which is pretty sick of him to do. So I've had a lot of basketball to watch. And I mean, you know me, I love basketball. And I've just been thinking about... have you been watching at all?
I watched the Horns in the SEC tournament.
Nice.
Yeah.
Go Horns. Good showing. I mean, good showing.
We beat the Aggies.
Yeah, beat the Aggies. That was pretty cool. Give Tennessee a pretty good run for their money. Yeah, it was a good showing. Tennessee ended up winning the tournament, so you know, good on you guys. I was pretty impressed. But I'm sure you've seen this, and you knew more about this in the college football conversation than I do. But I just want to talk about the conferences and how they have changed. And I want to name some... teams that play, colleges that play in the Atlantic Coast Conference. For example, Stanford University.
Wait, Stanford balls in the ACC?
Yep.
But they don't play football in the ACC, do they?
No, it's all like mixed up now. It used to be consistent, and now it's all different. But yeah, so the ACC is comprised of Duke, Louisville, Clemson, these are like the historic ACC teams. But now, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Syracuse, these are all, you know, historic ACC teams. But now, joining their ranks are SMU, which of course is Southern Methodist University, which is in Dallas. And then the two that really get my goat are California and Stanford.
And so Cal and Stanford are refugees from the Pac-12, which is now just Oregon State and Washington State, if I stand corrected.
The Pac-2, I don't know. But it's the same story for Washington and Oregon. They have to travel to Rutgers several times a year to play.
That's really far.
On, and it's just not only like a stress on the players and an unnecessary... burden on the colleges financially to like do that extra travel, but it's also just like a lot more air miles and a lot more resource wasting for no reason. And we're sacrificing regional rivalries for this. Teams that, you know, have had historic rivalries don't get to play each other as regularly. It's just, I just wanted to highlight the waste and the absurdity of our society as it, you know, continues to skew more towards the power of capital and this, like, interconnected system, and just the, like, blatant ignoring of, like, oh, well, the team has to fly its three planes to Rutgers twice a year. That costs a lot of money. It burns a lot of resources.
Ignoring of, like, oh, well, the team has to fly its three planes to Rutgers twice a year. That costs a lot of money. It burns a lot of resources. We're doomed. We're cooked. That's sort of where I'm going.
I think something that makes this situation unique as opposed to just general capitalist enterprise is that the stakeholders in these institutions are all governments. Well, I mean, some are governments and then some are private universities.
Yeah.
And then they come together and they form these contracts as conferences, right? And this, mm-hmm. generally those just relate to profit sharing and expense sharing. It's really interesting. Because it's so big money, right? And it's let's just say UT, the Longhorns, for example. Let's just say they make $100 million a year from football. I think it's something more than that. But really, the value comes down the line. The value is in the public, in the PR, in the marketing.
Right.
The first time everybody ever heard of the University of Texas, pretty much everybody on the planet right now, the first time they ever heard about UT or what UT is through the football program. Its ubiquity is unstoppable. Mm-hmm. There's an argument. I read a book a few years ago, but the argument was basically like these institutions, these big public colleges, Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, UT, these institutions aren't the institutions that they are today without the football program. It's like the football is the university. It's almost like there's this little university thing hanging off of like this football organism. Something that really differentiates HBCUs from maybe other more prestigious, so to speak, private institutions is like HBCUs don't win football games. Like, it's a profound difference, right? Like, why
just
aren't,
in the economic development,
like, you know, in the circles that I grew up in like white suburban America, like people disregard HBCUs as like not real colleges or like not prestigious institutions. And I don't think that can really be decoupled from the fact that they're playing like D3 ball, right? Low profile athletic programs. Anyway, that's a tangent.
No, I mean that's a great tangent.
It's like these institutions come together. It's like governments coming together to participate in capitalist enterprise. And that is kind of fascinating. Because the government is who we turn to when we need like worker protections. The government is who we turn to when we need like environmental protections. And then we have these state governments taking kids from low-income neighborhoods and making them beat the shit out of each other so they can rake in, right? Like, hey, poor kid, do you want to come and get brain trauma so we can make like essentially billions and billions and billions of dollars? College football dominated the sports landscape for the better part of the 20th century. Like, people didn't even like pro football until the fucking 60s, 70s. There were no pro football teams in the American South until the 50s with the Atlanta Falcons because of the dominance of college football. College football to this day is still, I believe, makes more money. It's still a larger economy than the NFL.
Wow.
And all of these stakeholders are it's mostly governments. It's mostly state governments.
Operating through state universities. Yeah, it's pretty intense. And then to think that, you know, football is a game that came out of like war practice post-Civil War, right? You know more about the origins of football than I do.
Yeah, I mean, just a bunch of guys being guys, man. let's go fucking hit each other. Yeah, no, I mean, there really isn't much more to it than that.
Yeah, the violence. Like, what if soccer was more violent and we got to just, like, touch each other a lot?
Just guys being dudes. yeah, I could get into that, but it's not important. It's really just, like, guys wanting to hit each other. And throughout history, there have been women who love to play football and want to ball, but society has not supported them in that endeavor at all.
Yeah. Except when they are wearing very skimpy outfits.
Yeah, that's a bad look.
Yeah. But no, I wanted to touch on some of the madness underneath the madness in terms of, you know, how we got
it's
here.
All it's all about the dollar, right? Like, the realignment. It's always just about money, right? But it's only unique in that it's the government.
Yeah.
It's strange.
And I think culturally,
there was a time when UT signed that contract with the Longhorn Network and Disney to where the interests of the largest media conglomerate in the world were essentially one with the state government of Texas. That was weird.
Interesting. I think the reason I bring it up in context of our beat is these are the kind of events that make cities wonderful, right? Being able to go and see your local team play a team that you hate and, you know, get that catharsis out, you know, root for your boys, really enjoy a sport that you love watching. And then, you know, as it gets bigger and more interconnected, you get the opportunity to see better teams play and teams from other places play, and the competition becomes more exciting, and the possible connections between fans grow, and the interconnectedness of our institutions is a good thing, right? But when it's at the surface level, just around sporting events, and when the only way to get from place to place is for these teams to play is on an airplane, and then in most cities the ability to, you know, visit without a car is going to, you know, make your time less pleasant, it just contributes to the hegemony of motor vehicle access, and it's, you know, part of the hegemonic culture, and it's just something that I think is fascinating and that we don't really talk about a whole lot.
We don't view either of these as politics.
Right.
Neither of these are at the forefront of, like, political analysis, or, you know, people who self-describe as that sort of thing.
Right.
But both of these are deeply political. The actions of our state government, like, it's on us to be like, hey guys, what the fuck is this? In both regards, right? With regards to how we administer public space, how we want our transportation networks to be designed, how universities do athletic, like, we've regulated this before with Title IX. We've regulated universities. It's all public money. The roads are public money. The lack of sidewalks, that's public money. It's all a choice.
It's all a choice, man. That they've hypnotized us into believing that we don't have anymore.
Right. Because, like, we're going to build back better or something. No, I mean, it's silly. It's just so silly that the Democrats are so weak.
the junior Democrats, and I don't care if Bernie Sanders is their dad or whatever, but the junior Democrats need to break away from the party and say, we can't do this anymore, and they need to start a new political party.
I mean, I don't know.
I just, like, it's so hard to support even...
It's true. Like the absence of the fact that Kamala didn't even campaign on, like, oh hey, what if we had public health care?
Right.
It's just like, oh my god, yeah. The goalposts have moved so far.
Yeah.
That it's like, well, is it really even worth trying to reason with you people?
I don't think it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's why everyone is so, and that's why most people don't vote, right? Voting is important. Voting down ballot is important. You should register to vote. You should vote mostly in your, like, city council, school board elections. Those are the ones that matter. Those are the ones that are going to have a pretty tangible effect on your community and the people around you.
Yep.
And then you got to get fucking mad. You got to get mad. You got to take your dick in one hand and your heart in the other. And you've got to call your governments. And you've got to tell them, I'm fucking mad and I'm not going to take it anymore. I want public spaces for my children. I want to be able to go into the park and read a book. I want to be able to walk down the street without being hit by a fucking car. Because I'm mad, damn it. And you've got to give those people a piece of your fucking mind. Because those people are killing your children. They're poisoning your air. They're poisoning your water. They're putting microplastics in your fucking penis. And it's time they fucking heard about it, goddammit.
And for all the evils that the United States is founded upon, our system of government was intended to give people the ability to guide the government and control society and culture. And I think they would shudder at what this has turned into. And
go on.
No, I was
just going to say the gooners won't be stopped.
Exactly. Yeah.
The gooners will not be stopped. We are one. We are one. We will not come.
This is what Alexander Hamilton dreamt of.
Alexander Jonesleton.
Alexander Baconleton.
Oh, goodness gracious. Golly gee. This is a substantive episode, I have to admit.
Yeah, no, I came in hot with some new research documents. I'm super excited about my Mile High Trolleys book. I'm excited to learn more about the tramway strikes. That's something I'm going to do some more research on. I bought another book at this little bookstore in Colorado Springs that's about the early history of the Cripple Creek mining district, which is where it was one of the first real sort of gold strikes in Colorado when, you know, Anglo settlement was happening. And it was a place where a lot of the strong labor movement was centered. It was a place where labor actually held a good deal of control over the extraction of those resources for quite some time, and where some of the some bloody events happened to eventually squash that. I know more about some of that history as it relates to Denver and sort of the formation of the government in Denver, but I don't know as much detailed history of the mining and how the labor unions developed and things like that. So I got a book that's going to help me go deeper on that. So hopefully I'll find some more stuff that's relevant to our beat in there. But yeah, I'm coming in hot with some research. So stick to it. Be safe out there.
I'm trying to push some new features to Roadway Report.
Awesome.
I'm trying to make a missed connections for car crashes. I need to make a click to share to where, like, you can print out a QR code that says, like, someone died here. I want to make that. Some new stuff to come. I don't know. I've just been depressed lately, so it's just cyclical. Give it a couple weeks.
Yep, exactly.
We'll be back in business.
Exactly. Yep, be gentle with yourself. Do things that make you happy. Go jump in the lake. I mean that with love.
Yeah, and I will. It's Barton season, so.
Heck yeah. I saw it was like 96 degrees there.
Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Austin, Texas, where the sun burns bright and our hearts burn brighter. We will stand together. We will go outside. We will not game. We will goon. We will goon till the cows come home. We will goon till the pigs can fly. We will goon till the government spends its money responsibly.
Those kids had it coming. Wait, fuck.
God.
They had it with a false flag. False flag, people.
Goodness gracious.
So I do like that bit. I think that bit is funny.
No, the bit is good. The bit is good.
It's our signature bit.
I like you as Alex Jones for sure.
I like you as Alex Jones. I think that, yeah, this is something that I've said and thought for a while, but Alex Jones is, I think, emblematic and representative of how the right in this country has evolved in terms of their communication strategies and their political strategies. And it's something that the left just has not figured out yet. And I think that you owning his voice is a way to take that back. So I'm proud of you. And, you know, fuck Alex Jones.
Yeah. Amen. Well, yeah, man, I love you. I hope you have a good week. We should try to get a guest for next week.
Yeah, I have.
I think we can. I have definitely. Some people have given me like soft yeses. So
yeah, I have a couple people that have given me soft yeses as well. My coworker Steve is he's a daily transit user and city urchin, and I think he would have some interesting takes on the things that we like to talk about.
That's good. No, that's good. Yeah, I reached out to the founder of pedestrianspace.org. I think that's what her project is called. Let's
see. Well, that's cooler than my buddy Steve.
Yeah, pedestrianspace.org, I think. Yeah, Poland. Yep, that's her. And then I reached out to Mike Domus, the man, the myth, the legend. Austin transit blogger, public servant, I don't know, board member, total unhinged wacko, but a smart guy. So he'd be fun to have on the pod.
Sounds like he would fit right in.
Yeah, yeah, hell yeah, brother. no, I'm chilling, brother. I'm going to ride my bike a lot this week. Try to push a few features while the wife is with the family. Yeah, wife's out of town this week, baby. So we're biking and we're toasting in the Texas sun.
There you go, man. Well, be safe out there. Take care of yourself, get some sun, eat some good food, and I'm sure we will connect very soon.
All right. Love you, bro. Have a good week.
Comedy podcast. Get your ass ready for a comedy podcast about roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
Comedy podcast. A certified motherfucking comedy podcast
about roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
Get yourself together. It's a certified fucking good time. Yeah!